Well, hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another edition of the Music Video Land podcast from your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database, imvdb.com. My name is Adam, I do stuff for IMVDB, and with me as always is Mr. Doug Klinger in Pompano Beach. How you doing, Doug?
Doing super good. I'm appropriating races.
Good. Now that's our main job here. People think we run a database, but we're mostly appropriating races. And then we have somebody who loves appropriating races. That's all he does all day long north of the wall. We have Mr. Adam Alexander. Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. Nothing to add. That's fine.
No, just a regular one tonight.
Okay.
Doing good.
Thanks for that. And then on the podcast this week, we have a really awesome guest. I think our first, correct me if I'm wrong, Doug, first producer on the podcast.
I would say first exclusive producer, yeah.
Exactly. Mr. Jason Clone, producer of some amazing music videos, including most recently a video we all are super excited about, This Is How We Do by Katy Perry. Also some awesome Hero Mirai videos, such as Sweatpants by Childish Gambino, Hive by Earl Sweatshirt, as well as Loud Like Love by Placebo, and a whole bunch of other amazing videos. Welcome to the podcast, Jason.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of the site.
Awesome.
And what a great introduction too. It's royal. And I had no idea that I was the first exclusive producer on this, Doug. That's quite an honor.
Yeah, right. We had this thing, because you know, some people have produced and have been on. But yeah, you're the first. You're paving the way.
Now it's starting to make sense. You want to get all the secrets from me, find out which right. directors are crazy, you know. Right. All the behind-the-scenes stuff, okay.
We have some thoughts on who's crazy. We just need you to kind of confirm.
Yeah, we have a list. We have a laminated list in the back. I wanted to ask a little bit about what your job entails. It sounds kind of basic, but what your job entails, because I think people have a general idea of what a producer does, but I would imagine it is a little bit – I mean, everything's different for music videos, so it must be a little bit different for music videos versus like a feature film or a commercial even.
Yeah. Music videos are a little more like shooting from the hip, but I actually have this conversation a lot because I'm constantly trying to explain to people back home what exactly it is I do, because it's just such a hard job to quantify because it changes so much for every single project. And, you know, the duration of the project changes. Obviously, the money changes a lot. So you have to be very, very adaptable. But essentially what a video producer does, film, music video, anything, is, you know, the director comes up with an idea and the producer says, this is how we're going to execute it. This is how we're going to do it. So that's the, how you can boil it down to, you know, paraphrase it best, is just, I'm the one that puts the wheels in motion for an idea that someone else comes up with.
You mentioned having a team. What does your team typically consist of?
Usually it's a production manager or production supervisor, which works directly under me, then a production coordinator that kind of does all the paperwork. Production supervisor usually hires the crew, as far as, you know, the director and I will have the ideas of people that we want to bring on, and the production supervisor actually negotiates the rates with them and brings them on and kind of manages the entire production, just like it sounds like in the title. The coordinator does a little more of the organizing, does a little more of the paperwork. Then you have some office people as well. And that's kind of the base of the production team. Then as the process goes on, you start to bring more people into it. You bring the AD into it and the assistant director. And they come on and they start scheduling it for you and kind of, you know, breaking down the actual shoot days. So, and that's actually probably one of my favorite parts of the job is putting the team together. So I was always a sucker for those kind of movies where, you know, you got to get the band back together here. You know, they go around and put the team and watch them all work together. That's one of the most satisfying parts of being a producer is picking the right people who are going to work together, who are going to bring something special and unique to the project, then, you know, seeing how they all interact. And it's blown up in my face a couple of times. So
it's like a Mighty Ducks kind of vibe.
Right. Is that really how you do it? Like it's like kind of a montage, and you just kind of like you pull up, and like Jesse Fleece is like pumping iron, and you just kind of point at him and shake
exactly.
your head.
Exactly.
Yes. And it's like boom.
Exactly.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew that's how
it's an early '90s like karate montage kind of thing. Yeah.
Perfect. And so do you kind of like work closely a lot of times with. specific production companies? Is that typically how it works in the music video industry? You're working closely with a lot of production companies.
Yeah, it's both directors and the production companies. The production companies, you know, they learn if they can trust you or not. You know, there's a lot of money that exchanges hands, and basically, you know, I'm in charge of all of the money once the job awards and starts going into production. So, you know, the production company wants to be able to trust you, so they'll hire back a lot of the same producers. They don't usually just hand a producer, you know, a huge multi-hundred-thousand-dollar music video without knowing you, having worked with you before. Also, there's the director angle of it, which is, you know, I've just built relationships with specific directors, as you mentioned, a couple of them like Hero and Saman, who did Placebo, and Ellis Ball, and a bunch of different directors. But so those guys will always call me because we just have a history together and we've worked well together.
And then you're there on the day. And then how does your role change kind of once everything's kind of come together?
Well, once it's actually come together, it's more of kind of managing the, making sure putting any fires out. That's a huge part of it because music videos, I mean, there's just not enough. There's not big enough of a budget, and everything is kind of, like I said earlier, shooting from the hip. So it's, there are a lot of fires that are going to come up. So it's kind of putting out the fires. In a lot of these cases, stroking the director's ego, making sure that that they're in a good spot. You'd be surprised how insecure a lot of these directors are too. So it's like you kind of have to be the rock and the reassurance for the director while they're doing their job so they can do it to the best of their ability.
I imagine out of any production, music videos are causing the most fires. It's just the hunch.
Oh my God. Yeah, just a few.
I've seen a couple of call sheets for music videos, and some of the ones for bigger artists will have a note at the top, you know, no cell phones, no social media. I've even saw some that you know, require a non-disclosure agreement to be signed or something like that on certain sets.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something that's really frequent and that you encounter a lot? And is also that something that you kind of shoulder some of the responsibility for?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you shoulder all of the responsibility. Whenever something goes wrong, it's everyone turns to the producer. I've actually had that happen before, where police have shown up and, you know, gotten out of the cars and kind of like, who's in charge here? And everyone turns and looks at the producer. It's like, oh, you go deal with this. but yeah, there's a lot of things as far as, you know, the bigger sets, as far as non-disclosure agreements and just kind of secrecy, that the labels will state right at the beginning. Like Katy Perry was a great example. Obviously, you know, we couldn't leak any information about that, because if anybody knew that was happening, the paparazzi would just be swarming. And, you know, these sites, and I think we did actually have a little bit of a problem with a couple of leaks, and it's unbelievable. They'll like build websites out of this minute information that they gather. So if they actually were to show up on set, or if any of this stuff, if people took video while they're on set, you know, it's just, people go crazy for this kind of stuff. So
it's
really have to crack down on that.
So it's, but that's really the main thing that you're trying to prevent against with that kind of thing is paparazzi showing up, not so much like leaking the idea out before it's a fully fledged and fleshed out idea.
It's a little of both, but I would say what I'm more concerned about is people showing up and kind of harassing and stopping the production. The actual idea leaking it's nice to obviously keep that as quiet as possible, so everyone's pleasantly surprised when it happens, but it doesn't put the production in danger. Like, you know, if the paparazzi shows up and all of a sudden we can't get the artist out of the trailer.
And then all of a sudden paparazzi are in the music video. That's part of the plot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's at that point it molds into a completely different thing.
Yeah, and I guess that's definitely I would guess part of the you know, working with an artist like Katy Perry. I think we saw a call sheet that had like big icons of like Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook with like giant X's through them. Like, don't do this, or, you know, it's going down.
Exactly.
And for you know, a video like that, you know, that I think we were talking about it on a few podcasts ago when the video came out, how, you know, this is like I think it was her fourth single from the album. And, you know, obviously Katy Perry's a huge, you know, star. So the video must come with, you know, a little bit of money and resources. When you're working with an artist like Katy Perry, you know, even now, are there a lot of financial constraints to deal with? Or is that a little bit more freeing than working with somebody who's, you know, maybe on their like first album?
I mean, it's kind of nice to have the kind of budgets that Katy Perry brings. But with that also comes the, you know, there's a lot of extra money that needs to be spent because you're dealing with an A star, you know, celebrity. So it's kind of a little bit less of the money goes into the video, but you have so much more to deal with. So, and in situations like that, if there's something that they really want, you know that the money will magically appear. Whereas when you're dealing with, you know, much smaller artists or, you know, kind of someone on their first album, the money is much more finite. However, you know, you kind of have a little more creative freedom and everyone is willing to just really get in there and dig and make something special. So it's really still to this day, even though I, you know, get a lot of offers for big budget music videos, I'll still do a lot of the smaller ones if I like the band, if I like the director. And it's really it's a lot of fun to do the small ones. Really get your hands dirty.
If Katy Perry says, "I need the twerking ice cream,"
she's gonna get twerking ice cream. Yeah,
yeah. Even if you have like a whole, you know, a whole like, you know, post production facility working.
Exactly. It's like, "Oh, Katy, our animators have been done for a week. Oh, twerking ice cream. Bring them back."
I'm curious. Do you ever like, you know, you work with a lot of directors frequently, and Hiro Murai, for example, he's done a lot of kind of like a string of overnight videos that are.
Oh always, yeah, that's a joke we have.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
They're all nighttime videos.
Right, and he's done a lot in a row. And are you ever in the position where you like are kind of like trying to steer it in another direction? It's like, all right, same idea, but let's start 11 a.m. and try it from there. I think Sweatpants would have the same vibe at 11 a.m. What do you think, Hiro?
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. It's funny you should bring that up because Hiro's executive producer, Daniel Hind, actually just talked to me today about a treatment that he's writing. And my first question was, is it at night? that's kind of Hiro's thing. That's his jam. And he's, you know, he's really good at it. So I don't mess with that too much. But
is it at night?
Is it at night?
Yeah.
Oh, the new one? No, no, it's not.
Nice.
It could potentially be, but
For
anybody who
hasn't
seen these videos, if you go back and watch, we'll link them in the show notes. Sweatpants, Hive, and Chum, what was the last one? The Chet Faker video.
Yeah, Chet Faker. But I also did with him Queens of the Stone Age,
yeah.
Smooth Sailing,
right,
which was two nights in a row, and that was madness. So that was that was a fun one.
And do you kind of like get a feel for what that overnight, after doing so many of them in a row, is it kind of like, does it become a little bit easier, or are they always the worst thing ever?
Yeah, Doug, I'm going to be honest with you. You never get used to that. Absolutely, absolutely never get used to it. Sweatpants and Smooth Sailing, the Queens of Stone Age and Childish Gambino videos, actually, we shot back to back. So both of them. Sweatpants is also paired with Urn, which is kind of the little video bonus that's in that video. And so we shot Urn first at night. The next night shot Sweatpants. 2 days later shot two nights of Smooth Sailing for Queens of Stone Age. And you absolutely do not ever get used to it.
That sounds... Now, did you get to produce the one that was... Wasn't there a Hiro Gambino one shot in Hawaii? Was that produced by you also?
No, that was Jason Baum.
Oh, so Jason gets to go to Hawaii.
Always a Hiro really likes Jasons.
Yeah, well, yeah. Right, exactly. Doomsday seems to, because Jason also seems to do a lot of Doomsday videos.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of Doomsday, we should just mention that in the show notes. We'll put a link to Doomsday's hilarious ALS Ice Bucket Challenge video, which we really enjoyed.
Yeah, I was sad I missed out on that.
Yeah, you just went around the house, because they've got a new house. I think James Lees was on the podcast last week, broadcasting from that from their house.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, they have a new house over in Hollywood, and it's definitely more of the Doomsday vibe. They kind of just came out of this big office building that they shared with Hello, and it was really more of a traditional office. It actually kind of looked like a bank inside, and it was just not fitting of the Doomsday personality, which, you know, is obviously very young and hip. And this house is much more in tune to that. It's a lot of fun.
So I also wanted to ask, though, you know, in the, I wouldn't say early days of the site, but we have like a users database, you know, users who are signing up for the site, and we see their email and stuff like that. And I think early on, a username that caught my eye was Spicy Colon. which turns out to be we you, and your name is not actually pronounced that way. It's pronounced cologne, like the cologne.
Right. Yes. Spelled like colon, smells like cologne.
And I you're kind of doing a double take to people there, because you're broadcasting that, oh, this is, yeah, it's okay to say colon. But then you gotta have the sit down talk with them to say, like, because you know hold on, that's not it. I must really do a lot of sort of awkward situations.
It's actually a terrific icebreaker. You know, doing what I do, I meet a lot of people through email, and so it's kind of, it just immediately disarms people. And you know, I have to send a lot of really professional emails as well. And when you get a super professional, super serious email from someone that's got the email address spicy colon, it just automatically, you know, just lets you know that there's a little bit of playfulness in there. So yeah, it's kind of just people mispronouncing my name for since the beginning of time. So I kind of just went with it and had a little fun with it, and I absolutely love spicy food, so it made sense.
It takes a lot of guts to stick with the spicy colon email address too, and not have one that's like, all right, I'll keep that for my friends, but you know, when I do something serious, I gotta go to like my serious email address. It takes a lot of guts to stick with it. So I feel like I can speak for the two Adams in this, where we're really impressed by that.
I appreciate you saying that. It's really, this is such a stressful industry. And, you know, everybody kind of, it always feels like it's life or death. And obviously what we're doing is making entertainment. So you just kind of have to stay grounded and true to that and remind yourself of that often. And that's kind of why I stick to that. I actually have a really weird voicemail as well. And it's borderline unprofessional, but I refuse to change it because of this exact reason that we're talking about. You know, it's have to bring a little levity to this very stressful industry.
We're in support of that.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be sort of an element, I mean, of fun to it, I guess. And I mean, is that something that you try to, okay, obviously for like a late night or like an overnight shoot, which you've done many of, you know, there's kind of the issue of like crew morale, I guess. I mean, do you get into kind of dealing with that, or is it more the director's side?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, and that's kind of ties back into what you were asking me about before. What, you know, once the job is actually is set up, part of my role is kind of being in touch with every single department and, you know, taking the temperature of the crew and kind of feeling all of that out. And that really is a big part of my job, is kind of making sure that the lines of communication are completely open so everybody can do their job to the best of their ability, making sure the director is getting everything that he, she wants. You know, that's a really big part of it as well. So absolutely, kind of my interactions with the crew are a big part of what a producer does.
And which director is the biggest pain in the ass?
Yeah.
I don't think he'll mind me saying this because we're friends and he knows he's a pain in the ass, but Saman is definitely Saman is such a pain in the ass, but I absolutely love him. And it's funny because he and I are both geeks, so we geek out all the time, but he's also just, and he's a ridiculously talented guy. You know, anybody listening who goes and checks out his work, you know, it's jaw dropping, the kind of stuff that he dares to make.
Yeah,
but you certainly feel the pain working on his jobs, his projects.
Saban has been on this podcast and he's done a bunch of commentaries for us, and he frequently is apologizing through those things to just the crew in general, and he definitely we have picked up on that. Or if you just watch like any behind the scenes of any of his music videos, there's like a moment of him just like shouting really hard at somebody. And then just like walking back and starting again, like not.
Yeah,
not...
he's super aware that he's a pain in the ass too. It's funny with him because he just absolutely bleeds for his projects, and you know, I love working with people like that. That because every single we put way too much work into this kind of stuff to just accept mediocrity. So it's just kind of, when you just open yourself up and leave it all out there on the field, you know, you want everybody else to do that as well. So I think that's kind of, you know, the deal with him, that he just really opens himself up there and wants to make the absolute best thing he can possibly make. So it's just it's a little painful sometimes.
That's what we heard from when we had Ari Robbins on the podcast, when he was talking about a few directors that he's worked with who, you know, I mean, he's obviously has so much experience, you know, talking about directors. Yeah, he worked on Sweatpants.
Yeah, he did. He was Steadicam on Sweatpants.
And you know, having directors, and I think he was talking about A.G. Rojas, you know, just like pushing him, you know, kind of relentlessly, kind of mercilessly saying, you know, like, this is just how, you know, we need to roll. It needs to be, you know, we can't work at this level. We have to go to the next one. And I think that definitely shows, you know, especially in stuff like, you know, Simons and Heroes and Joel Cafali's work, and many others too. You know, they take it to the next level.
Absolutely. And I only work with directors who are willing to take it to the next level. It's, you know, the music video industry has kind of come through a revival, and it's, you're not doing it for the money. Like, let's be honest, it doesn't pay as well as a commercial or feature or anything like that. You're doing it for the love of the medium, and you want to be able to challenge it a little bit and see, you know, what kind of stuff you can make. And those are the only kind of directors I'm really willing to work with at this point. 'Cause it's, like I said, you're not doing it for the money.
And I was wondering, once the video is done, it's delivered, it's on Vivo or not Vivo. How involved are you, or how much do you pay attention to, you know, the long tail numbers on that? I mean, are you kind of watching, you know, what Katy Perry's "This Is How We Do" does in a week, or you know, is there any? Are you watching that after the fact?
No. Not really. Honestly, Katy Perry was one of the only ones that I've checked the numbers on. And the reason for that was just because I was absolutely floored how one day it was 1 million views and next week it was 50 million. You know, so it was just kind of just purely for entertainment I did that. But for the most part, no, I don't really check the numbers.
Because, like, yeah, it's music videos are one of those weird art forms where, like, the view count is, like, right there. I always wondered, you know, what happens there, but that's good. Because I guess you probably get drawn into that a little bit too much. It becomes like an obsessive numbers checking game at that point.
Yeah, it's also it feels a little faceless to me. Like I'd much rather hear from people. Which, funny enough, Queens of the Stone Age video. Well, actually, not surprisingly, Queens of the Stone Age Smooth Sailing is one that a lot of people will email me about, or, you know, just kind of like, hey, I saw this video. It's amazing. You know, and that kind of stuff. Knowing I know people are watching this stuff, but actually putting some personality to it means a lot more to me than just kind of checking the numbers, because, you know, there's just so much. I mean, these cat videos on YouTube have 50 million hits, so what, you know, it doesn't really make a difference to me.
Yeah, and so if you want to send Facebook or feedback to Jason, it's spicycolon@aol.com.
I see what you did there.
He held on to the spicy colon and the AOL email address.
Yeah, I'm really, really struggling to let go of the past.
I saw a blog post or some stupid thing on Twitter where, like, it showed that, like, thousands of Americans continue to pay for the AOL, like, client service. Like, that does nothing but just, like, give you access to your AOL email. People are still paying for that stuff. So are you one of those?
Apparently I am.
You are right. In the world that we've created for this podcast, yes. You are.
Doug turned that into a question. That was good.
Yeah, that's what we did. We're pro, okay? Episode 121, okay?
No, this is 120.
Oh, shit. We didn't put out.
You can swear on this. This is not kid friendly.
Oh, you can swear all you want. This podcast is for swearing and shit talking. Other, yeah. So
right, that's what it's all about.
All right, let me grab a beer.
No, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Well, you're behind if you're just now grabbing a beer. Okay.
So if you want to check out all the amazing music videos that Jason has produced, and the list is really awesome. You heard us talk about how much we loved pretty much all these videos over the past, you know, like 100 episodes of this podcast. Go to imvdb.com/podcast, and this is episode 120, and you will see all of the videos and all the links in there. I was gonna say, you're not on Twitter, are you, Jason?
No, I'm not. I don't believe in the tweet.
You know what? So then just go follow us instead.
We'll give you all the updates.
Yeah, exactly. We'll tell you what you need to know.
They didn't have Twitter back in the AOL days, so I'm still stuck in that.
You can follow Jason on IMVDB.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Go ahead.
I dare you.
That's one of those features. We're doing a UX revision of the site right now, and that's one of those features we need to make clear to people, because when you click the follow button on the homepage, it'll give you new releases for videos those people have worked on. So anyway, everybody's wondering what that button actually does. It doesn't tell you what it does.
But now you know.
Now you know. So we have some videos to talk about this week, but we also want to mention quickly that this weekend, if you're listening, we're recording this on Thursday, August 21st, and on the 24th, this Sunday, is the MTV Video Music Awards. And I was reminded because I went through the, it's embarrassing, went through the Taco Bell drive-thru today and they had gave me a cup that said what it is. So
was
there you go.
Was Ariana Grande?
It was embarrassing because you went through Taco Bell?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be embarrassed about Taco Bell.
You made no shame. There's no shame in the Taco Bell.
You made a healthy choice, I'm sure. You got something grilled or whole wheat, I'm sure.
So, Taco Bell's whole wheat. Yeah.
I don't think so.
You got a spicy Cullen out of it, too.
Oh, wow. That's Adam Alexander.
Adam Alexander. I wondered if he was going to talk on this.
He came back.
Adam hangs back for the interview portion because we just talk over each other. I usually have a nap for the first portion.
Yeah, but then he drops a bomb like that on us. He just saves it.
Yeah, it was worth it.
He's been holding on to that one, too.
So we are going to do a live blog, as we are wont to do. We've been doing that for a few years, and it's worked out pretty good because...
we did it when nobody even gave a shit.
Not that anybody will give a shit now, yeah. But so I was just going to mention that, you know, MTV is not playing music videos anymore. On the whole, they only have one show dedicated to music videos, and that is played during the overnight hours on most days. But they still do the VMAs, and I think they're still important because they, you know, moments happen. They're not always related to music videos, but they're usually tangentially related to music videos. So it's exciting.
And it's also because it's still like the longest running singular, you know, you can go back 20 years and say who won best video, you know, video of the year VMA. So, you know, there's a lineage there that kind of has carried on, you know, the big pop stars, when they win the VMAs, they still give a shit. And so, and it's like a big deal. Like, you know, music videos seem to kind of pop up around this time. There's been a lot of big artist music videos. I'm pretty sure Ariana Grande or Jessie J, Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj are premiering the Bang Bang music video after the VMAs or something. And they're also opening the show. So, you know, they still tie in, you know, stuff, you know, releases and stuff to the VMAs, and the big pop stars still care about them. So yeah, we'll be live blogging them suckers.
And so in the years past, the one thing that MTV kind of throws a curveball at is when they're going to announce the what they call the, I think they call them the professional awards.
Yeah.
Or technical awards, because the awards are broken into two main categories. There's the you know, the technical awards like best cinematography, best choreography, best art direction. They have some relatively, you know, drilled down music video categories, and then they have the main ones that are announced at the show, like best female video, best pop video, etc. I think the first year we did this, they actually did not announce anything. They just sort of threw it on their website at 2 a.m. But last year they had a little segment that said that was sort of a commercial bumper that said who won what. So we're hoping for that this year because they just throw it at us all at once and we put it up on the site.
We're hoping for at least that.
Hoping, yeah. We'll see.
Hoping for at least that. Jason, are you gonna watch? I know the Heroes 3005 video is nominated. You didn't work on that one.
No, that's actually not me. I do have one in the fight though. The Avicii Hey Brother video.
Oh, nice.
Director Jesse Sternbaum. That was nominated, I believe, for Best Music Video with a Message.
Nice, yeah. There is one. It's a soldier message, and that's produced by Boulevard Industries. Yep. Sweet. Okay, so you got a dog in the fight. And so, are you, even though you didn't produce Sweatpants, you still pulling for that one in the hip hop category?
No, I did Sweatpants. Didn't do 3005.
Oh, I mean 3005.
Absolutely pulling for that because I'm always pull for Hero.
And so, Kim? Oh, Jesus Christ!
Yeah,
fuck everything. Fuck that whole whole part. I've got a
note here. Like, ask Jason about Hey Brother, and Doug's like, so you don't have a dog in the fight.
I didn't say you don't have one. I just was talking about the hip hop category.
Just alluded to it.
You beat me to it. I was getting there.
It's made me feel like shit. I don't have anything in there.
Are you even gonna watch? What the fuck? Who do you give a shit?
Yeah, I'm gonna watch. Actually, I'm going to the Doom Haas. Which is Doomsday's new house. That's what they're lovingly calling it. I'm going to go there and watch it from there with some of the nominees.
Sweet. Nice.
I think the first time we had Hero on the podcast, we asked him if he went to the VMAs, and he said no. So I guess hopefully maybe he's kind of keeping that tradition alive, and maybe he's watching the Doom House.
They have tickets, and actually I was invited as well, not with them, but with the Hey Brother people. It's kind of just more turned into a party and it's more than a live viewing. Hiro and I actually went to the Grammys. It was pretty cool. We got to go to the Grammys last year for a Frank Ocean project that we worked on.
Oh, nice.
So that was pretty sweet.
Nice.
That was fantastic last year. And we'll link to a video of that in the show notes with the big background projection.
Foreground,
yep. We shot that out in Acton, California, which is about an hour north of Los Angeles.
And nice. we will also link to that episode of that first episode that Hiro was on, because he tells a pretty sweet story about Isaac Hagee cutting his foot open or something.
He's walking into a pane of glass,
right,
at the VMA party.
At a VMA party, and we're talking about VMA parties, so it's relevant. Is worth me remembering and saying.
Yeah, that sounds like Isaac Hagee. I've partied with him a couple of times. He's fun.
And I just want to mention real quick that so a lot of people have mentioned that Beyonce has the most nominations for a person over a number of music videos. But if we're just talking about raw music videos, Fancy by Iggy Azalea featuring Charlie XCX, Turned Down for What by DJ Snake featuring Lil Jon, directed by Daniels, first one directed by Director X, and Pretty Hurts by Beyonce, directed by Melina Matsoukas. All three are tied at 4 music video nominations. So there we go.
And if you want to verify that, you could go to our page dedicated to MTV VMAs 2014, and we got that info right there. We put it together, and we tell you the number.
I love that Doug always comes in with the shameless plug.
Oh, there's exactly, no shame. Yeah. Why would there be shame? I'm trying to help the people look at their information that they care about. If they're listening to us talk about music videos for an hour, they care about seeing numbers on our website too. So
this is true.
Throw that stuff out there. And the other thing they're going to care about is some of the music videos from this week, and I think we should talk about those. But make sure you tune into the blog, because that's how blogs work. You tune into them and you listen to us live blog the VMAs on Sunday. Sunday at night.
Let's start with this was a little bit of a quieter week than compared to last week, but there was still some pretty
very top heavy.
Yeah, there was some interesting. Yeah, a lot of the stuff came out like on Monday and Tuesday. It's been a little bit quieter later in the week. But one of the songs that really we loved this week, we should talk about first, is the Haim video for My Song Number 5. Directed by another person who has been on this podcast, Dugan O'Neill.
Double dip Dugan, we call him, because he's the first person on twice. We don't ever call him that, but that is true.
But a few surprises about this video. Haim, this is sort of, I think, the fifth single off their album. Most of their singles had videos done for them in late 2013, earlier 2014. So I was surprised to see this come out as a single.
Sixth.
Geez, wow. Okay. For the Days Are Gone album, and this also featured a verse by ASAP Ferg, which I was not expecting as well.
Adam Alexander, you had heard this version of this song before, right?
Yeah, I had heard that.
Man, I usually I don't mind ASAP Ferg. I think he's a fun rapper. He just ruins this song for me.
At the very best. Doesn't really add much.
Listen, his verse is whatever, but he's just like yelling during the whole song, and it's like one of those songs that I'm so comfortable, like I know so well, and I've listened to a lot since it came out, because this album has been out for a while, and to like hear just ASAP Ferg suddenly yelling in these parts that I think I know, it makes me more upset than I should be. Do you guys hear the tone of my voice?
It's pretty much a perfect song. It didn't need any help. It doesn't need help.
That's got nothing to do with this video. The video is fantastic. ASAP Ferg's presence in the video is great, but his presence in the song, I'm not a fan of. I don't know why they did this. Why did they do a version? What's the goal? To throw ASAP Ferg in a version of this song.
It's kind of a thing, right? To throw a hip-hop verse into some kind of a cool indie pop track. Yeah. It's a thing.
Right.
It's a thing they do, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it does nothing.
And that seems to be the whole point of ASAP Ferg's verse, because like his first punchline is just like the word female band, which is like, yeah, let me hit him hard. by letting people know that I'm doing this song. but let's talk about the video, because the video is great. Like Adam said, directed by Dugan O'Neill and starring Vanessa Bayer of SNL, playing kind of like a Ricky Lake type character. Dallas Murphy is the name of the show, like this fake show. It's got a very 90s vibe, the video. And it feels like Ricky Lake, right? That's the vibe everyone else got.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a bunch of really cool cameos, too.
A lot of cameos.
From Kesha and Ezra Koenig from Vampire Weekend. And my favorite cameo was Grimes, of course. She's in there eating in the cafeteria.
And snuck in the back is Big Sean.
Yeah, he's in there.
Behind Grimes. That's the only time I saw him. But he's definitely in there. And he's just hanging out in the back. And that's a fun use of Big Sean.
Yeah, I love the little hidden cameos. That's a super cool thing. I wish there were more videos doing that. It's fun.
And this is something that they couldn't really do on their first video, because I think they're obviously much less known then, although they seem to have a lot of famous and cool friends. But this is just sort of jam-packed with people. And people, you know, people, there's no like title that's like, hey, this is Grimes. It's one of those things where you kind of have to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, except Kesha. Kesha's name, her character name, is very close to Kesha. And one person... Kaisha, right.
Yeah, is it Kaisha? I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Kaisha, yeah. And then I think that's her cat, too, actually.
Oh, that's weird.
I read that.
It's weird that you know that.
Kesha's cat.
One thing I want to mention is the guy playing the mime is Nathan Barnett, who was like in that Josh Forbes video, Say Anything Wrestlers, that was... that we recently talked about on the podcast. You guys know the guy. That's it. That's all I'll say about him.
I didn't get that at all. Wow.
Didn't land. Yeah, I only know that because we got the cast list, and he was on it as the mime. He's in mime costume, though, which we've not seen him that way before. So Adam Alexander has. Tell that story, Adam.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe you've not seen him in mine, but I definitely have.
Yeah, cool. You picked up on that. So what's the story? Give us some background.
Well, you know, it's that I've not seen him in one. I have no way to. Need to move on.
Okay, we should. Thanks. Wow, Adam Alexander moving us along. You know we've hung up. You know we've been on this video too long when Adam Alexander is moving the show along.
Just one quick note at the end here is that my favorite detail of the video, and this seems like a very Dugan O'Neill detail, is that the guy who brings out the basket of cotton balls for the woman who's afraid of cotton balls has a hat that's made of cotton balls. He just has a basically what is a glass bowl full of cotton balls and then a hat that somebody has painstakingly glued cotton balls to.
Man, what a moment in a music video. Like, who else but Dugan can, like... Yeah, there's going to be a man with a cotton ball hat and a bowl of cotton balls, and that's an idea that was pitched and used. We didn't talk about it. We didn't talk enough about that it's a hilarious video. A lot of Dugan O'Neill's videos are super funny like this, although not all. He did a few this year that are not funny, but still super great. But that one is funny. Anyway, more videos this week.
Dugan's hilarious.
Yeah, definitely. Have you worked with Dugan, Jason, or are you guys just homies?
Yeah, I've actually worked with him before too. So it's funny. He loves this early '90s style. He loves, you know, kind of that whole Saved by the Bell era. And it wasn't surprising for me when I turned this video on and saw it. I'm like, yep, this is Dugan, and so and it's always hilarious. I worked on the Stupid Hype web series with him there.
Oh nice!
Courtney those Davies are fantastic.
Well. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, even the name, just Dallas Murphy. Dugan does a really fantastic job with the details of this kind of stuff, because I think a lot of people kind of, you know, not naming any names or anything like that, don't even have anybody in mind, but it's a kind of a style that you can kind of phone in easily, and I think that Dugan always adds those extra little elements that, like, Vanessa Bayer's outfit for this is so spot on.
Yeah,
I love the captions for each of the guests at the bottom. You can just basically read through the captions. They're hilarious.
Yeah, moments you gotta like pause to like jokes you have to pause to catch. His last video for Energy by Duck Sauce also had a lot of those moments where it's like stuff's moving so quickly that you kind of have to like pause it to catch the jokes. But there's a lot of them in there. So
He also loves to throw the crew in as well. You can see that he's actually in it. I think he's in the control room. I saw the hair. The real hairstylist is really doing the hair of Haim. So yeah, he loves to throw those little Easter eggs in there.
Yeah, and the Director's Bureau seems to like to do that. There was the what was that Chromeo video, Adam, that you just posted from the Art of Music video page?
Jealous.
Yeah, Jealous. That video is full. Dugan's actually in that video, and he didn't even direct it. That's like full of Director's Bureau office members and stuff. So neat stuff. Let's talk about Taylor Swift.
Shake It Off.
Shake It Off. Taylor Swift, directed by Mark Romanek, who you may have known from being a famous guy.
Yeah. So if this is also a video that kind of came, I think the theme of the week is out of left field a little bit. That ASAP Ferg verse kind of came out of left field for me. This video definitely came out of left field for me, not only because this is one of those rare instances where I don't think anybody had heard this track before, and I might be...
No, I do think she came
out... probably right.
Yeah, I think she, like, released or announced her new album. This was the new single. It all kind of happened at the same time.
It was, yeah. And I watched the video, and then, you know, we do as we usually do. If there's not any director immediately attached to it, we kind of look for the director info, and... I was kind of shocked to see that Mark Romanek directed this. I don't really know why, because when I think of Mark Romanek, I think of like recently, like Picasso Baby by Jay-Z, Invisible by U2, and then going back a little bit further, like Hurt by Johnny Cash, like The Perfect Drug by Nine Inch Nails, kind of super like beautiful videos, Criminal by Fiona Apple, beautiful videos, but
really dark, not, like not pop.
Yeah, I mean, he's done pop videos, but like all of the Mark Romanek files in my head are don't have like Taylor Swift in like, you know, ballerina costume. So it has this really weird mix of having that little bit of that Mark Romanek touch, but then you've got this kind of manic 24-year-old, you know, pop star energy that Taylor Swift brings to it. And it's a really compelling mix. I love this video a lot.
Yeah, I thought this video was a lot of fun. I really like. This could be one of my favorite Taylor Swift videos. It just was like I feel like it was like it showed a lot of personality from her while still like kind of fitting that into kind of an overall concept. And it was a happy ending. It's all about being yourself and not listening to the haters.
Yeah, for sure. I love her awkward side, her awkward persona that she has, and that's kind of the whole premise of this video is that. She basically she can't dance, and that's not going to stop her.
it's believable, you know, because like you know, she people criticize Taylor Swift for being like a little bit I don't know what the fuck they criticize
like a false
her for.
Modesty.
Yeah, that yeah, right. Exactly. Like oh my god, thank you so much for this award type of a thing, and this seems super genuine. Like that. I did a Taylor Swift impersonation just now, guys. What'd you think?
It was good.
It was Taylor Swift winning an award.
Perhaps a VMA.
Potentially, she's not nominated this year, though.
So we should also mention that the cat, and here's another weird thread that goes through this, and we'll talk about in the next video. Is twerking? People twerking with knee pads. Which I've never seen before, and all of a sudden it's everywhere. And this is the screenshot. It's her kind of making a way through a tunnel of people.
You haven't been around enough twerking because knee pads and twerking.
Is that like the standard equipment? Is it like you show up with like your set of knee pads and your cutoff shorts?
I mean,
that...
it can. You don't need to wear cutoff shorts to twerk, but like it helps. And so, yeah, I think if you were to,
I need to wear cutoff shorts to twerk. I do need and knee pads and a helmet.
Right, yeah. A helmet. Adam also wore a helmet for his ALS challenge, which is cool. Cool fun fact about Adam. I don't even know what that means.
So we should, yeah. So anyway, I think people, including Earl Sweatshirt.
No, listen. We're not going to do that.
Okay.
We won't even. It's
the appropriation thing.
We won't even talk about it. It was just my stupid joke at the beginning. That's its only mention.
We could just insert stock appropriation.
We'll just go back
here.
To the last time somebody said it about
insert
music videos.
Insert here and right along.
Put it in here.
Jason, that's one of the things that we're constantly running into, like watching kind of reaction for music videos, is people constantly, kind of, you know. picking out something in a music video, whether of like appropriation of like another race or something they don't like. I mean, when you're like going through a music video in that production, you know, pre-production phase, is that like ever a conversation that people have, like either the label or the artist brings up, like how are people going to react to this?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, and the bigger the star is, you know, the more aware of it that they are, and, you know, they don't want to offend any of their fan base. They want to, you know, make sure everything is PC. So there's a lot of that conversation that goes into it.
Because I know for like it was like the tiniest blip, but I think even for something like the Katy Perry video, people were like, oh, why is she wearing cornrows or something like that? Something you would never probably think of going into it, but then people are like,
we thought of all of that.
Oh, you did, really? Okay,
yeah, and that came up. You know, that was one of them that we let slide, but there were a couple other things that, you know, I'm not necessarily even used to having to look for those things. They're usually, if anything, the label brings it up and the label says, you know, would this be offensive? And I'm pretty sure they have a team of people who review it and just say, like, it's that fragile. That's how ridiculous our society is too. And, you know, obviously you don't want to offend anybody, but at the same time, some of these things are never meant to be offensive at all, and people will find a way to you know, make an issue out of it, especially with somebody like Katy Perry. So for sure, that's a big deal.
Too, that more so than any other entertainment format, that music videos are really picked on for this, like more so than film and TV. I don't read like think pieces on an episode of some show where there was a misappropriation claim. Like, it seems like it's all music videos. I don't know, maybe that's just me, maybe I just only watch music videos.
I was gonna say, you might just watch a lot of music videos. Yeah, it's all of the mediums, it really is. But it's, You're definitely onto something, though, that, you know, with the bigger artists, there's a huge fear going into it, and so it's definitely something that's talked about. We had a meeting about it,
and I'm sure they had.
You guys had a cornrows meeting.
We had a cornrows meeting.
The name of this podcast is cornrows meeting.
We actually all tried it out. We put cornrows in our hair, and
I'd break each
Is this offensive?
Right. Yes. Am I appropriating right now? No. Okay. Put them in. Okay. That's cool.
I'm sure that was that must have been a meeting that Taylor Swift people had, because there the diversity on the twerking team is very, very prominent. It's like very, very obvious.
I mean, Mark Romanek responded to, oddly enough, specifically Earl Sweatshirt. And fuck, we are talking about this now. Earl Sweatshirt, without watching the video, tweeted things. He even said without watching the video and whatever. And Mark Romanek responded. And
we'll put that link in the show notes.
Yeah, whatever. We'll put the link in the show notes. And what Mark Romanek said is that basically what anyone who had watched the video would have realized is that she's dressing up like different types of dancers. And so she dresses like a ballerina, and she dresses like a b-boy, and she dresses like a twerker, if that's a dancer. She's taking music video tropes. And if you want to know more about music video tropes, you should read Chris Black's article on our blog that he posted today. He goes through a little bit about what a music video trope is, and they're playing on some of those in this music video.
Again with the plug, we need a plug sound effect.
Real quick though, I think really the only person being poked fun of or whatever kinds of things they think this video is doing is really she's making fun of herself, if nothing else.
Absolutely.
Right, and then at the end of the video, everyone's in regular clothes and everyone's just dancing. Why? Nicki Minaj, Anaconda. Yeah.
Oh, wait, I just want to say just one more that doesn't have anything about appropriation. Okay. But I have this to say, maybe we should say what our favorite, Taylor Swift, like, it's because they're kind of like action figures. Do you like ballerina Taylor Swift? Do you like, I don't know what the gray dancer stuff is. But my favorite by far is ballerina Taylor Swift. I think she was enjoying that the most.
Ballerina when twerking. Or like when doing the gyrating dancing. That's my favorite.
I liked the ghetto blaster red hoodie Taylor Swift the best, I think. Mm.
So Jason,
I think you really hit on it there, that part of what was really enjoyable for me about this video was the fact that you can tell how much Taylor Swift is enjoying herself.
Right.
And that was like, it made me smile watching the video. I'm like, she's really having a good time.
Yeah, it's good, and it was good. It really did show some fun personality.
Speaking of knee pads and twerking, we should talk real quick about Anaconda.
Yeah, and what's surprising about Anaconda, not to hijack your intro of this video, is that Taylor Swift video came out, and it was at like 20 million views after 2 days, and like I thought that was going to be it. That was going to be your banger of the week, and then Nicki Minaj came out, and she now after 2 days, 30 million views. Wow. Blowing Taylor Swift out of the water with a lot of butts shaking. And that happens in this video.
And an absolutely fucking mind-blowing performance from Drake in this video. A VMA award for that performance.
I'm really upset. Drake gets a lap dance with basketball shorts on. I'm really upset about that, because that's been my move for like 10 years now, is going to strip clubs in basketball shorts. It's a way better time.
Well played. Well played.
It's a way better time. Okay, your money is more valuable, essentially. And so
he stole that from you. Definitely.
Drake has stole that from me. I'm making that claim. Yes.
Write him a strongly worded letter.
I am. I'm going to link him to this podcast and make him listen to this moment. I won't tell him where it is. Make him listen all the way through. Have us listen about appropriation and everything. Just so he knows how upset I am for him stealing my moves. So
we should mention that this is directed by Colin Tilley of Lennon Alley Entertainment, and the whole concept of the video is actually it's a long video. It's 4 minutes
long.
And 49 seconds, but it has basically the same four dancers in her in the entire video. It's just those people. They're in sort of like a jungle set, and then they're in doing a little chair dance, and then toward the end you get the Drake strip club thing, but mostly it's just sort of like setups and dance moves with them. And then there's also some great
dance moves. Dance butt moves centered.
There's also some great product placement of Beats. Who else? They're all over this thing. I think it's maybe like, I don't know, it looks like maybe like five or six settings. But you know, Colin Tilley does a good job of kind of stretching out for the whole video.
Constantly, who works with Nicki Minaj frequently, mm-hmm. They've got a rapport, and there's a lot of stylistic elements that carry through all of their collaborations together. You also miss the kitchen scene that's in there. It's just her in a kitchen, and then her squirting whipped cream on herself. That's the extent of the kitchen stuff. But it goes on for a long time. A lot of people have been talking about this video. Like, I was, like, flipping through the radio stations, and I landed on sports radio, and they were talking about this music video. It's making an impact.
I think the fun element is that it samples Baby Got Back.
Yeah.
And the famous My Anaconda. I'm not going to say it, but you get it.
You're not going to say it.
No, we'll sample it right here.
So hold on, let's get into this, because I've never really understood what is his Anaconda.
Everyone make it. For kids dances.
Anyway. The Nicki Minaj one or the Baby Got Back?
The Baby Got Back one. Yeah.
Man, his Anaconda. They're a little bit more straightforward she doesn't say Anaconda really. She's just like, I'll fuck him in his car, make him my pussy, make him go to sleep. Like, it's very, I should be a rapper.
Yeah.
My pussy.
you should be laying down beats. That was tight.
That was dope. That was really great.
And I'm pretty sure none of those words are in the actual.
No,
song.
She does. It's during the one part. She's like. Go to sleep. Call it NyQuil. I clearly didn't make that up. I don't know about NyQuil.
Was anyone like, I didn't see anything about this. Was anyone offended by this video out there in the internet world? Because they were really offended by the single art. There was a huge
I was offended by this song. I made it. I honestly, Doug sent me over a couple of things that, you know, the videos that came out this week, so I can make sure I was up to date on that. And I got about 20 seconds into this video before I had to shut it off. I'm sorry. And, you know, and I appreciate music videos, and I have nothing against London Alley, Colin Tilley, anything. I could not make it through it.
Well, Joe, I mean, a lot of it is just like different variations of that 20 seconds for the next 4 minutes. So it's not negative. I'm not saying, it really is like they kind of establish these locations and these styles, and then they just do more dance moves, more of Nicki Minaj's. But I mean, all of this stuff is great. This is what you. What the fuck else are you going to do for this song? You cannot do anything.
It's not her best song, though. I'm with Jason on
that. Well, it's not her best song, but it's a
song.
It's a club banger.
It's a song.
It is a song. We've established that.
It is, in fact, a song.
Well, everybody went nuts over the... that was the craziest thing, because I've never seen, like a cover, like art album cover, single cover, even. Yeah, yeah, just like,
and the funny part is that with the parental advisory logo branded over her butt, you almost imagine something far worse than what's actually behind there.
Oh wait, yeah. I haven't seen that version. What the fuck are you imagining?
Gotta Google that.
Just Google it.
What is our one other video, Adam, that we're gonna talk about? I'm excited because there's three to choose from.
So, War on Drugs under the pressure is great, but it's I think the one that we had the most to say about, I think, would be the Action Bronson Easy Rider video.
I think there's a lot to say about this video.
Just a quick show of hands or show of yes or no's. Has anybody actually seen Easy Rider?
Yes.
I'm familiar with it. No, I have not seen it.
No.
I'm same here. I've never seen it, and one of the podcasts I love is How Did This Get Made, where they talk about terrible movies, and I've even listened to the entire podcast about them talking about Easy Rider 2. but I've never seen Easy Rider. So I went through and I read. So this song is called Easy Rider, obviously, and then the video is very, very cinematic. It stars Action Bronson, and it is directed by
Tom Gould,
and. It kind of follows Action Bronson on, I mean, the very loose narrative is he's on a quest to get his guitar back. He's a Vietnam vet, wakes up in a hospital, and he's riding a motorcycle across America. There are a few little plot points that they kind of get, but I think they just kind of took the image of Easy Rider on the motorcycle that kind of, you know, image everybody knows from the movie, and then just kind of built their own narrative around it.
Yeah, because this is not what the movie's about.
No,
the movie,
no.
Easy Rider is not about Action Bronson kicking ass and taking acid.
Although no, but there's an acid drop scene in Easy Rider, but there's nobody's a Vietnam vet in Easy Rider, as I understand it.
Right, there's three characters. One of them's like an attorney. None of this is. It's not this movie. It's not this.
Right.
It's not.
Which I think is important because there's been so many movie parody music videos lately. We had the Fancy video, which is a parody of Clueless, and then the Black Widow video, which is a parody of Kill Bill. So I think it's something to at least acknowledge.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so, it was kind of just inspired by the, right, like you said, those classic images of kind of just like a motorcycle and a sunset. What I really loved about this video, with the narrative that they did use, is just kind of like the absurdity of it and Action Bronson's willingness to go along with the absurdity of it. I mean, very few rappers. This is a new thing that's happening with rappers in music videos is them just like going doing crazy shit, like wearing cowboy boots, standing on a mountain, fake playing a guitar. Like you didn't get that from Jay-Z in the 90s. And so I'm really like pleased with this direction of hip hop videos.
And yeah, so that occurs at the end there, which is an amazing sequence. And Action Bronson, I was kind of impressed with his acting in this.
Yeah, definitely.
He's good.
Yeah. He's just such a presence. Like all the scenes that are like backlit and it's just like a silhouette of his body. Like he's just like.
He's like lumbering around in his cargo shorts. Yeah.
Just throwing people around. And that's really him. Like that giant beard. And like, you know, you see any video of Action Bronson and he's, you know. Like in between like clips of him just like smoking weed in public, he's like always like just in like shorts and a pair of like New Balance. Like he's just like a kind of like a dude. He's himself always, and even when he's playing this character, and
all
this stuff of him riding the motorcycle and like grinding his teeth and reacting to the acid, just so funny. Yeah, so
he had this web series. I don't know if it's still going or, but basically the web series is just him eating food in different places.
Fuck That's Delicious, it was called. Yeah. Fuck That's Delicious. He's like, all right, we're going to just go get a milkshake now. I love this milkshake place. And then he just goes and gets a milkshake. And he has to like hold his beard back from the milkshake. Oh, man. That'll be in the show notes.
I think I've seen all his video. I can easily say this is my favorite of Action Bronson's videos. Though the others are in this vein, this one is my favorite.
Yeah, Bronson worked a lot. Works a lot with Rick Cordero, Jason Goldwatch, got those kind of guys. But yeah, always doing some crazy stuff. He's like, he toes the line, you know, where it's like, there's like a line between like straight rappers, like straight up just regular rappers, and like comedy rappers, and like I think the line is Action Bronson, because like,
yeah, he does.
Side of him is Riff Raff. Like, he'll just as easily do a song with Riff Raff as he will with like a more established, like straightforward rapper, and he kind of like fits in with both, and still kind of and doesn't have to like be one or the other. Like, he just is himself, and it works with both of those different styles. So Action Bronson is the line. That's also the name of this podcast.
Oh, I was going to ask that too. I was going to ask how you guys came up with the names and what ours was going to be.
We have a list,
and then we draw it from a hat.
Unlike Friday morning at 10 a.m. It's just sad me and like the clothes I slept in, like shuffling through a hat. That's how we roll at IMVDB. I totally agree with you, Adam. Like, I've seen all the Action Bronson videos. This one's my favorite. And I think one of the reasons it's my favorite is they definitely like bumped up the production value to cinematic. This has like a very like explicit cinematic vibe to it. And you know, I think some people kind of disappear in that, and Action Bronson just like takes it over.
The symbol was really good too.
Yeah, also that's the Rick Cordero one. Yeah, and that's very similar. That one's kind of like
but he's wearing a blonde wig.
I know.
And shooting a gold gun.
We had Rick Cordero on the podcast, and he talked about that wig specifically. That one's like a blaxploitation film a little bit, which comes from the same era, right? Similar era, like the 70s. Sure. Blaxploitation and Easy Rider?
Maybe.
Action Bronson.
He likes
70s cinema. Action Bronson. Who knew?
I think we may have covered it for the week.
Yeah, we did it.
We have put a layer of music video commentary over it. I think a little bit of a quiet week, but we had some major, major videos come out. A lot of times the top of the top 10 is like 2.5. Million, but this one we're gonna be duking it out between like a 30 million and a 20 million. That's usually doesn't happen. So.
And then number three is like 400k.
Yeah, number three is like 3,000.
Big 3,000.
So Jason, thank you so much for being on this podcast. This is awesome.
Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it. Huge, huge fan of the site. Doug knows that, you know. I always send over the links to IMVDB on my Facebook page whenever anything comes out. Really, really big fan.
That's awesome. While the directors and all that are trying to bring their game to a new level, we're trying to bring our entering credits into a database game to a new level every single day.
That's it. that's also the name of this podcast.
So just one more plug for this Sunday, if you're listening to this, for the 2014 Music Video Awards, we will be live blogging. We may or may not be sober. It's just the luck of the draw. So we'll see you then.
And I definitely won't be sober.
Yeah. Adam will be very sober. We'll see you on Sunday, and then we'll see you next week. See you later.